to the Richard Nixon Experience.
Walter, as you know, Indiana is considered the most southern of the Midwestern states, one time bastion of the Ku Klux Klan and a traditionally Republican state. No surprise that CBS News estimates that President Nixon has carried Indiana.
Walter, it's been a most odd campaign and election. Here you have a not terribly popular leader of a minority party piling up what all these early returns suggest will be a huge majority in the country. And in this campaign, we've had the incumbent on the offensive. We've had the challenger on the defensive. That's all very untraditional. But some are all very unexciting, too. And any lopsided situation like this, of course, the opinion polls take all the suspense out of American elections. They just lie like a heavy smog over all conversations and calculations.
From NBC News Election Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News, Tuesday, November 7th, reported by John Chancellor and David Brinkley.
And good evening to you all as we begin our coverage of the 1972 election. David Brinkley and the rest of our team are here to cover the returns in contest for 435 seats in the House of Representatives, 33 in the Senate, and 18 governorships, and of course the presidency. So let's begin with a look at the popular votes recorded so far for the presidency. With 1% of the vote in now, Mr. Nixon leading better than 2-1, just about 2-1 over George McGovern. John Schmitz, the American Party candidate, small number of votes, and Dr. Benjamin Spock of the People's Party, an even smaller number. But this pattern that you see on your screen now, 65% for the president, 34% for McGovern, although it's very early in the evening, is close to what some of the polls were showing and some of the polls were indicating in various states. We had a heavy turnout today in most of the populous states, and it looks like around the country there were many, many people who voted. It looks like a heavy turnout. In Michigan, there were long lines. In New York City and upstate, there were long lines of voters. In Illinois, the voters went through cold and often rainy weather to go to the polls. in record numbers. In Ohio, they extended the hours in some polling places because of trouble with voting machines, but there was a heavy vote there, and they're talking about record numbers of voters turning out in California. Leaders of both parties today, both the Republicans and the Democrats, said that was good news to them. Senator McGovern's people said they were finding very good turnouts in places where they expected support, and so did the Republican National Chairman. NBC News has three winners declared so far in this election, and David Brinkley will report on them.
We will, of course, keep you up to date all night on the popular vote, as you've just seen, that is, people in voting booths. We have been able to project three states, the outcome in three states. They give Mr. Nixon 32 electoral votes. As everyone knows but often forgets, it is electoral votes that elect somebody president. The three states are Tennessee, where we project that Mr. Nixon will win with 68% of the vote. Kentucky, where we project 61% for Nixon, and Indiana, 64%. That's three states settled so far. As everyone knows but often forgets, it takes 270 to elect anyone president, to make you the most powerful person on earth. And so, in this country today, those are eagerly sought little nuggets. When we have 270 votes, we will have the winner. And when we do, you'll be the first to know. John?
One final note. Harry's Bar in Paris, a gathering place for expatriate Americans, held its annual straw poll today. Richard Nixon got 56% of the vote. Don't laugh. Harry's Bar has not been wrong in one of these straw polls since 1924.
CBS News coverage of Election 72. Tonight, the latest returns. This broadcast is sponsored by the Ford Motor Company and 6,283 Ford and Lincoln Mercury dealers. The goal, no unhappy owners. Reporting from CBS News election headquarters in New York, here is correspondent Walter Cronkite.
Good evening from CBS News election headquarters. Some or all of the polls have closed now in a dozen states, and the early returns put President Nixon, as expected, out in front and by a sizable margin. These early returns, far too few to be significant, however, nevertheless conform to all of the indicators and all of the polls. Let's take a look at that popular vote. With about 1% of the precincts counted, President Nixon has 570,000 votes, and George McGovern, 283,000. That's a 2-to-1 margin for President Nixon. And CBS News is able to say, on the basis of our sample precincts, that the president definitely has won Kentucky and Indiana. Kentucky by a 65-to-35 margin, Indiana by an even larger one, 67-to-33. Also, in Indiana, our CBS News estimate is that the Republican candidate for the governorship will win there. He is Mr. Bowen, and he has beaten the former governor, Mr. Welch. On the electoral vote, President Nixon now has 22 electoral votes from Kentucky and Indiana. He's leading in states with 35 more electoral votes, and that would give him a 57 toward that 270 he needs for re-election. The total vote coming in tonight indicates a very heavy turnout across the entire United States, much heavier than anyone had anticipated when the newsmen, the pundits, and the pollsters out across the countryside said they were finding apathy among the many states. Reports of the heavy turnout indicate that vote could very well go above 80 million, and that would be a record. It would have to go above 88 million to be a record in percentage above the previous record established in 1968. CBS News can now say that President Nixon is also a winner in Tennessee. Since most of the state, including the heavily Democratic cities, have not yet reported, the current estimate, though, of 72% for Nixon probably is going to drop somewhat as the polls close in the rest of the state. But when all the numbers are in, President Nixon will add Tennessee to his total vote. Across the country, the Nixon landslide seems to be developing about as predicted. But of course, there are a lot of other races to be watched here tonight. And how broad and how long will President Nixon's coattails be? Will he carry into office a new House of Representatives and a new Senate, Republican for only the third time in the last 40 years? There are 33 Senate seats up this year. All 435 members of the House, of course, are up. 18 governorships are up, too. Besides that, thousands upon thousands of local races for everything from mayor to dog catcher and state offices, of course, as well. And a lot of propositions on the ballot, a lot of referendum-type questions being asked.
President and Mrs. Nixon voted today in San Clemente, California. They were applauded by a small crowd as they drove up to the Concordia Elementary School, two blocks from the Western White House. And they were the first to vote today in the school. Richard Valeriani reports.
To vote at precisely 7 a.m. when the polls opened. Their voting place was the library of the Concordia Elementary School, about a half mile from the Western White House in San Clemente. The president spent more than 5 minutes in the voting booth, filling out a newspaper-sized ballot that contained 26 state and local propositions, including a referendum on legalizing marijuana. Mr. Nixon carried his home state in both 1960 and 1968, and he's favored to do it again, with heavily Republican Orange County supplying much of the margin. After casting his ballot, Mr. Nixon gave presidential pens to the election officials. The Nixons then flew back to Washington for a family dinner with their two daughters and sons-in-law at the White House, where they'll watch the election returns on television. The president is also expected to show up at a victory celebration at a Washington hotel later tonight. This event represented a landmark of sorts on the American political scene. Richard Nixon has been a rather controversial part of that scene for 26 years, and he expects to be around for four more years. But this was his last appearance as a candidate for public office, and someday there may be a plaque here at this school to commemorate the occasion. Richard Valeriani, NBC News, with the president in California.
This is the ballroom in Washington where the Republicans plan their big victory party, and the loud music already is underway. This is where both President Nixon and Vice President Agnew are expected later tonight. It's a party for about 5,000 people invited by the White House, by the Committee to Re-elect the President, and by the Republican National Committee. To say that people around here are confident is an understatement. The White House already has spread the word. They expect to carry 48 states, with only Massachusetts and West Virginia in doubt. I've been traveling with Vice President Agnew, and last night on the airplane coming back from his final rally in Richmond, Virginia, there was a chance to chat with some of the people who will be at this party tonight. And one of them told me that weeks before, they had already ruled out any possibility of ever losing this election. So they really felt it was over before it started. This is Tom Pettit, NBC News, at Republican headquarters in Washington.
For George McGovern, the long campaign for the presidency ended this morning when he and Mrs. McGovern voted in the basement of a church in his hometown in South Dakota. John Dancy has a report.
Senator McGovern voted today in the Congregational Church in his hometown of Mitchell, South Dakota. McGovern flew home to South Dakota early this morning after one last exhausting day of campaigning that took him all the way across the country, from New York to California.
You're so good to be here. Appreciate it. Yes, you never change. It's good to see you.
With him as he voted this morning, as she has been throughout most of the campaign, was his wife, Eleanor. McGovern voted a straight Democratic ticket, said he thought he'd made a wise choice. He spent part of the day talking to students at his alma mater, Dakota Wesleyan University, before returning to Sioux Falls to watch the results come in. This is where 22 months of campaigning will end for George McGovern, underneath this rainbow in the Municipal Coliseum in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. It's here that later this evening McGovern will come to make either his victory or concession statement. At this point, most people are speculating it will be a concession statement because the McGovern campaign, by its own admission, is in real trouble. Throughout the campaign, the McGovern forces have concentrated their efforts in a dozen or so states and more or less conceded the rest of the country to the Republicans. Here's their assessment of how they're doing in those dozen states or so. They think they have a good chance in California, Wisconsin, Massachusetts, South Dakota, the District of Columbia, and surprisingly, Arkansas, where party leaders are working hard for the ticket. They list as questionable big states like Illinois, Michigan, Ohio, and Texas, and they say they have some real problems in New York and Pennsylvania. So it's not too hopeful a picture. Four of the must-win states are now listed as questionable, and two of them are doubtful. But whatever the outcome, McGovern feels he has run a good race, he's done everything possible to win, and now tonight he waits to see if it was enough. John Dancy, NBC News, at McGovern headquarters in Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Sergeant Shriver cast his ballot in Rockville, Maryland, the Washington suburb where he lives, and Spiro Agnew voted at his hometown in suburban Baltimore. Ron Nesson reports on both candidates.
Agnew and his wife voted at an elementary school in Towson, Maryland. Towson, in Baltimore County, is the Agnews' legal residence, and it's where Agnew got his start in politics when he was elected county executive 10 years ago. Agnew jokingly declined to confirm that he voted Republican, and he would not predict how the election will come out, but he did tell one reason why he thinks the polls show McGovern far behind.
Different things, different issues affected different areas, and certainly the idea that McGovern was criticizing the foreign policy of the country, which has never been done, I think hurt him very badly.
Agnew will follow the returns tonight at Republican election headquarters in Washington. Shriver and his wife voted at a high school near their rented estate in Rockville, Maryland, a suburb of Washington. The Shrivers did not return home from the last campaign stops in Texas until 5 a.m., so they slept late and did not get to the polls until mid-afternoon. They voted the straight Democratic ticket. Shriver complained that the real issues were not discussed enough in the campaign and the polls were discussed too much.
I'd like to continue to discuss the issues because I don't think the issues really ever got discussed enough. Never really did. Why was that? It seems to me that I spent more time talking about whether the polls were right or wrong than whether unemployment was up or down or whether it could go up lower or whether war and peace was handled right. Nearly all the time it was a question of the polls.
Shriver will make his concession or victory statement at Democratic election headquarters in Washington. Ron Nesson, NBC News, Rockville, Maryland.
Senator McGovern said today that the Columbia Broadcasting System may not broadcast from his election night headquarters in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Technicians at CBS have been on strike there for 4 days. Earlier, the network said it would confine its on-the-spot coverage to the two major presidential candidates, but now McGovern has said, as far as he's concerned, the answer is no. It will be hours before all the polls everywhere are closed, but some more of the votes are in, and we'll have a look at them in just a moment.
Look now at all those races around the United States. We have Mike Wallace reporting from the East, Roger Mudd from the South, Dan Rather from the Midwest, John Hart from the West, and Eric Severide to analyze the whys and the hows of this big election night. Since most of those early poll closings have come in the South, we'll hear first from Roger. Roger?
Well, the solid South used to be solid. Last time it was solid Democratic was 1944, and since then it's broken apart. But tonight, just looking at our regional map, you can see the building blocks already are going into place for a solid Republican South. Already we have a presidential winner in Kentucky and Tennessee, and early indications are from every poll and every pre-voting sounding that the president would sweep the South, perhaps doing not as well in Texas. But tonight already he has picked up two states, Kentucky and Tennessee. The Tennessee presidential race, our vote profile analysis shows that the ultimate count there will be 72-28. That is, as Walter pointed out, basically an Eastern Republican vote. That percentage may drop. In the popular vote in Tennessee, with 14% of the vote in, the president is leading better than 2-1. But take a look at the Kentucky presidential race. You'll also see there in our vote profile analysis a 65-35 split over Senator McGovern. In the popular vote in Kentucky, with 50% of the vote in, he's leading easily 2-1 there. In the Kentucky senatorial race, however, Walter D. Huddleston still maintaining just a razor-thin edge over the former Republican Governor Louis Nunn. That's a Republican Senate seat being vacated by John Sherman Cooper, and if the Republicans intend to take over control of the Senate, they cannot afford to lose any seats they now have. That is one of them. And in the Tennessee senatorial race, there is evidence tonight of ticket splitting, not as much as in Kentucky. The incumbent Republican, Howard Baker, with 51,000, and Democratic Congressman Ray Blanton, 38,000. So that race looks favorable for Howard Baker. Busing was an issue there, but all indications are that Senator Baker has been able to overcome the charges by Ray Blanton that he was responsible for the appointment of a federal judge who ordered busing around Nashville. So, Walter, we're off this evening already with two states in the South, and I dare say as we look at that map through the evening, that dark Kentucky-Tennessee block will spread all the way to the Gulf.
CBS News coverage of Election Night 72 will continue in a moment.
Good evening again. We've been looking at some of the returns from our specially chosen precincts, precincts that will tell us how different kinds of voters are voting. It is now clear that Richard Nixon is the winner of this election. If what we have learned so far from the votes already cast continues to happen as the polls close across the country, the president will be reelected in a landslide. That's what our trend now indicates. The president reelected by a landslide.
Your host for Bridging the Political Gap. I want to thank you first for tuning in to our podcast and invite you to come to our website, randallwallace.com. There you can get a copy of our book, Always Vote Your Conscience, Don't Take It Personally, and Don't Fight the Same Old Battles Over and Over Again, with a lot of policy suggestions and things that I think everyone could embrace, an argument for why we need to be working together instead of fighting with each other. Also, you can take a look at the first 11 episodes of this podcast, which was a podcast documentary that looked at the World War II generation of bipartisan leadership that built the American century and the lessons we can learn from them to apply to today's situations. Again, thanks for tuning in to our podcast. And if you've enjoyed our show, please leave us a review at wherever you get your podcast. And now, let's get back to the show.
Now, Sergeant Shriver is appearing at the Washington Hilton. Let's go.
Thank you very much. You're wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks very much. Thank you. Thanks. Thanks a lot. You're terrific. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks a lot. You're sensational. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Well, thank you very much for your extremely warm welcome here this evening. I'm very grateful to you, and so is my wife, Eunice. You are the vanguard of the future, and I'm very grateful to you for your reception. Thank you. They're really good. That's right. I've just spoken with Senator George McGovern. And I'm happy to report to you that despite the election returns, he is in good heart with clear convictions about the rectitude of what he espoused during the campaign and his dedication to the people and to the future of our country. He told me that he is just now leaving his hotel room and going over to the local headquarters to make his own statement about the election. And so I would like to wait for his statement before I make any on my own behalf. But since I was in the hotel with my wife and several of my children and with the chairman of the committee and the vice chairman here, I thought I'd just like to come in and say to you personally, because you represent so much that is good in America, I wanted to say to you personally how deeply grateful I am, my family is, and how much we look forward to working with you in the years ahead.
Sergeant Shriver, the Democratic vice presidential candidate, making a kind of a pre-concession statement. We'll have more on Election 72 right after this. Instead of going to local stations for cutaway time, we're going back to South Dakota, where Senator McGovern is about to appear.
And his son-in-law?
Frank Reynolds is at the senator's hotel.
Son has just gone by.
Up to the description of what's happening as the governor leaves the hotel and goes to the Coliseum in just a moment.
Secret Service agents and his aides. Here is the senator now. Mrs. McGovern, senator,
we're going on. I think we better go on over to the Coliseum. We'll see you over there.
All right.
Well, the senator is obviously not going to tarry here. As we noted earlier, he probably would want to go on over to the Coliseum and talk to his supporters there. He gets a sort of hand that cheers the candidate's heart as he moves through the lobby. He seemed to me to be in pretty good spirits, but obviously he's had a rough evening tonight. It's not been a good evening for him to watch the television. He's going over to the Coliseum now, just a very short distance away from this hotel. There is the big planned victory celebration, or at least the election night gathering. And obviously now, although there will be a lot of cheering and screaming and stomping, and I suppose they'll be yelling, "We want George," just as at rallies before, the senator will have a very sober statement to make. This is Frank Reynolds in the McGovern Hotel headquarters in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Well, apparently I'm not supposed to go off just yet, so I'll stay. See if we...
Senator
McGovern has moved out now. If I can just move around another camera, I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to do it.
Well, while you're hunting, Frank,
he has gone
fill out in for you and point out that...
He has gone out to get into his car now. The motorcade will form up. It won't take him very long to get over there.
At the other location in Sioux Falls is Frank Tomlinson. One thing about Sioux Falls, South Dakota, it won't take very long for the senator to get from the Holiday Inn to the Coliseum. Frank Tomlinson should be in the Coliseum now.
There has been no official announcement here at the Coliseum that Senator McGovern is on his way. The rock band is still playing. A group is still dancing. They're crowded wall to wall. The decorations are all up, ready for a victory celebration. But of course, there will be no victory celebration here tonight. The hall is filled with mainly a lot of young people. I was talking with some of them just a little while ago and asked them about what seems to be George McGovern's defeat. They said, well, he ran a good race. He didn't blow it. And one of them said, look, man, he's a voice that needed to be heard, and we hope a lot of people did hear him. The people here in the audience are, as you can well see, crowded shoulder to shoulder, awaiting the arrival of George McGovern. He'll be coming from the Holiday Inn downtown here in Sioux Falls, and that's approximately five blocks away. It will take him several more minutes to get over here, but everyone is now ready to hear what George McGovern has to say. It will not be a speech of happiness, that we're sure of, but Senator McGovern is certainly to put on one of his most effective speeches of this whole campaign. These are the people who have backed him. They have backed him all along, all throughout the campaign. Many of them are South Dakota political workers, members of the Democratic Party that George McGovern helped to build. He started the Democratic Party really about 15 years ago here in this state. And as Harry Reasoner said not too long ago, he is probably the first presidential candidate not to carry his own home state. The people here don't seem to be in any jovial mood by a long distance. They don't seem to be sad either. They just seem to be awaiting that final word when George McGovern takes the podium here and thanks them for their work and tells them that he did the best he could and that we expect him to say, the election is now over, and we can rally behind President Nixon. Even though earlier in the campaign, Senator McGovern said that he wouldn't say that, or at least he would have a difficult time asking people to rally behind President Nixon. The motorcade is, we assume, on its way here right now. They're still waiting. The bands have stopped playing now. A few minutes ago, the rock band was playing a popular song of the day, and they said, when things look darkest, you want to listen to the words of this song. It was called Keep On Truckin' and Truck Your Blues Away. Everyone cheered, and everyone started dancing. So far, no sign of any of the McGovern party as yet. They should be here, oh, I would say, in the next 2 or 3 minutes. They have some 5 to 6 blocks to go. There is just an announcement being made now, but it is not the announcement that George McGovern is on his way. That has officially to be announced here. We fully expect this crowd to go slightly wild when Senator McGovern does arrive. They've been waiting here since 7 o'clock on the local time.
Senator McGovern is not yet at the Coliseum. ABC News coverage of Election 72 will continue right after this message.
George McGovern is expected any moment at the Coliseum in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, for what is perhaps the most dramatic moment of the evening. We go back to Frank Tomlinson at the Coliseum.
Here at the Coliseum in Sioux Falls, or rather, the band is just striking up the McGovern song, This Land Is Your Land. Senator McGovern will come through the door just over my left shoulder. The band now playing, awaiting the arrival of Senator McGovern. It should be just a few more minutes before the senator is here. We expect him. The Secret Service is now standing in the doorway, so it shouldn't be long until he is here. The man from South Dakota, who apparently lost his own home state in this presidential race, will probably have quite a bit to say to this crowd gathered here. These are all workers. They're workers of the Democratic Party. They're workers who have been in the precincts and out on the tusting, so to speak. Now they're picking it up, the clapping. They're waiting for McGovern. This is their man. Unfortunately, their man is now projected to be the loser in this presidential race. I would say there's somewhere between 3,000 and 4,000 people gathered here. I'm looking over at the door now. Many more Secret Service men are around and people looking in through the door. Apparently, Senator McGovern will be coming through that door in the next minute or so. Everyone here now clapping in unison to the song, "This Land Is My Land," and here he is. Mrs. McGovern preceding him, coming up on the stage, shaking hands. George McGovern, he may have lost the race, but he didn't lose the hearts of these people. Now approaching the podium, Senator McGovern waving to the crowd. It's obvious this crowd is certainly McGovern territory. This is the place where Senator McGovern calls home, and everyone is just ecstatic over his presence here in the Coliseum tonight. He's now pulled out a short, what looks like a short speech, laid it on the podium, spending his time accepting the plaudits of this audience. The McGovern workers who have struggled through some 22 months with Senator McGovern, they're now waiting to hear what he has to say. Leans over, talks to Mrs. McGovern now, Eleanor McGovern.
Thank you very much.
Waves to the crowd. He almost has the smile of a winner on his face. This crowd certainly thinks he is, whether the electorate thinks so or not. Senator McGovern now laying his speech on the podium.
Sergeant Shriver is in Washington at the Washington Hilton watching Senator McGovern. He said earlier he would save his formal statement until he heard the senator.
Here among my friends in South Dakota, where this campaign began almost 22 months ago, we now bring it to an end tonight, and I have just sent the following telegram to President Nixon. Congratulations on your victory. I hope that in the next 4 years, you will lead us to a time of peace abroad and justice at home. You have my full support in such efforts. With best wishes to you and your gracious wife, Pat. Sincerely, George McGovern. The first presidential concession that I remember hearing was that of Adlai Stevenson in 1952. He recalled the old Lincoln story of the boy who had stubbed his toe in the dark, and when the lad was asked how it felt, he replied, "Well, it hurts too much to laugh, but I'm too old to cry." It does hurt all of us in this auditorium and many others across the country to lose, but we're not going to shed any tears tonight about the great joys that this campaign has brought to us over the past 2 years. All of the satisfaction and joy that we have found in these past 22 months are not going to be washed away with the tears and regrets of one night. We have found the greatest outpouring of energy and love that any political effort has ever inspired at least in my lifetime. Eleanor and I and our family, along with Sergeant and Eunice Shriver, will never forget the people of this campaign. And those... We will never forget those that we have seen in countless meeting places all across this country, those we knew about on the telephone and on their feet, who have worked so hard, so terribly hard, for all these many, many long months. The poet Yeats said something that I quoted the night of the Massachusetts primary, and it looks like Massachusetts is coming through again tonight. Yeats said, "Count where man's glory most begins and ends, and say, my glory was I had such friends." And that's the way I feel tonight. Now, the presidency belongs to someone else, but the glory of these devoted working friends and their dedication to the noble ideals of this country sustains us now, and it will sustain our country. We will shed no tears because all of this effort, I am positive, will bear fruit for years to come. There can be no question at all that we have pushed this country in the direction of peace, and I think each one of us loves the title of peacemaker more than any office in the land. We will press on with that effort until all the bloodshed and all the sorrow have ended once and for all. I want every single one of you to remember and never forget it, that if we pushed the day of peace just one day closer, then every minute and every hour and every bone-crushing effort in this campaign was worth the entire sacrifice. And if we have brought into the political process those who never before have experienced either its joy or its sorrows, then that too is an enduring blessing. Now the question is, to what standard does the loyal opposition now rally? We do not rally to the support of policies that we deplore. But we do love this country, and we will continue to beckon it to a higher standard. So I ask all of you tonight to stand with your convictions. I ask you not to despair of the political process of this country, because that process has yielded to much valuable improvement in these past 2 years. The Democratic Party will be a better party because of the reforms that we have carried out. the nation will be better because we never once gave up the long battle to renew its oldest ideals and to redirect its current energies along more humane and hopeful paths. So let us play the proper role of the loyal opposition, and let us play it in those familiar words from Isaiah that I've quoted so frequently. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. God bless you. Good night.
Mr. Vice President, Mrs. Agnew, all of our very distinguished guests here at the Shoreham Hotel and the very distinguished audience listening on television and radio. At Ontario, California on Saturday night, at the conclusion of a speech to what was estimated a crowd of 50,000, I said, "This is the last time I will ever be addressing a campaign rally as a candidate." It may be that was the last campaign rally as a candidate, but this means tonight we still have a rally right here. Now, let me briefly touch upon several significant things about this election. First, and this for me is rather unusual, I've never known a national election when I would be able to go to bed earlier than tonight. Second, I want to say here to this great audience and to all of those who will be listening on television and radio that I know from having been a candidate for vice president and a vice president for 8 years that this is always a team campaigning for office. I want you to know that during the period of the last several weeks since the convention, when I've had to be in Washington for reasons that all of you could well understand, that I watched the vice president as he carried the major burden of campaigning. I watched with no concern and considerable amusement the attempts that were being made by some rather vicious heckling to get under his skin and get him to blow his cool. Let me say, the real test of a campaigner is to go through the fire of a campaign when he's taken all the heat. The vice president has proved he's a great campaigner. I was going to say he can take it and he can dish it out too. I also would like to pay tribute to all of the other members of the team. I refer, of course, to our campaign chairman, Clark McGregor, to John Mitchell, his predecessor, to Maury Stans, our finance chairman, to all of the members of the cabinet team who did such a magnificent job traveling through this country, to representatives from the Congress, the House, the Senate, and the national administration who carried the story that we wanted to tell throughout the land. They were a great team. I think they've been a great team over the past 4 years, and in this campaign, when you add up those states to what has been called a rather significant victory, they get a great deal of the credit, I can assure you. I also want to pay tribute to another group that too often is overlooked. I wrote a book after the election defeat of 1960, and one of the chapters of that book dealt with the campaign of 1960. When you write a book, you're supposed to dedicate it to somebody. And not being an expert at this sort of thing, I just put on the flyleaf of the dedication page in this book about the campaign of 1960. I dedicated it to Pat. She also ran. And I want all of you to know tonight how very grateful we should be to the wives of our cabinet members, to the distaff members, as sometimes I guess we can still call them that in these days when you're supposed to be very careful about how you describe people. But in any event, at least, shall we say, to our first ladies, and they are always our first ladies in our own families. I'm simply very, very proud of all of them. I can summarize how I feel about all of our campaign in this way. Our speakers throughout campaigned hard. Our speakers throughout campaigned clean. They campaigned on the issues, and I'm proud of the campaign they put on, and it showed in the results. Something else was new in this campaign. All of us know, of course, about those young voters. And I recall at the convention that we were told by some of the enthusiasts there on our convention that the predictions were wrong, that because of the overwhelming youth vote that was going to go against us, that we had a very, very hard road to hoe if we were to win this election. Let me say, based on the results I have seen today, we have accomplished what was thought to be the impossible. We've not only won a majority of the votes of America, but we've won a majority of the votes of young Americans. All of you should know that one who stands in this position with 4 years ahead must think of what he wants for those 4 years, and we want, of course, many things. We want to do the very best job we can for all the country, for all people in our society. We want to have in mind, too, the fact that in this election, it was very unusual in another respect. It was not region against region. It was not one age group against another age group. It was not party against party. I think we can be proud of the fact that as we look at our majority, which is a very large majority, it comes from all of America. Let us remember that in these next 4 years, we're not going to work for one group against another. We are dedicated to work for all Americans to make this a greater country. To those millions of Democrats and independents who supported us, as well as, of course, to the Republicans who supported us in overwhelming numbers, you have our deep appreciation. To all those who work so hard, our appreciation. I'll never be able to thank all of you personally, not even get all the letters out that I would like. But I know what you did, and I know how much you contributed. I would simply like to leave one final thought with you, perhaps in a personal sense. No one knows before the votes are counted how it's going to come out. No one really would have predicted after our convention that we were going to win this kind of a victory. And now at the present time, I notice some of the commentators are referring to the fact that it may be the greatest victory in American political history. Let me tell you. I have two reactions to that. Of course, it's great on election night to think that we won a victory, but this will be a great victory depending upon what we do with it. In other words, we win elections not simply for the purpose of beating the other party or the other person, but to get the opportunity to do good things for our country. And the next 4 years will be the time that we will try to make ourselves worthy of this victory. I will simply say, in that connection, it was a great victory. But the greater the victory, the greater the responsibility, the greater the opportunity. And we're going to try to meet it, dedicating ourselves to those great goals that I have discussed at such great length throughout this campaign and will in the next 4 years, building that world of peace, of real peace with honor, throughout the world, and building at home, not only peace at home, but the new prosperity and the progress for all Americans that is so close to our hearts. And finally, on that personal note, about 30 days ago, when I was sitting in the Lincoln sitting room late at night trying to get some materials ready for a National Security Council meeting the next morning, Tricia dropped into the room around 10:30 or 11, she was going out to dedicate a dam or something at a non-political affair. And she was asking me, she was trying to get some suggestions about remarks, and I find that whenever I make suggestions or remarks to Tricia or Julie or Eddie Cox, they always can do better without any suggestions. But I made a couple. And then before she left the room, she turned and said, you know, Daddy, did you ever stop to think that this is your last campaign? And I said, yes, I have. And as I think of what she said that night, I simply want to say from the bottom of my heart, thanks for making our last campaign the very best one of all. Thank you.
Dr. Kissinger, and also from Senator Humphrey, he is speaking, and it'll be a few moments where we can get him.
Yeah.
We have Dr. Kissinger.
Hello.
Dr. Kissinger, go ahead, please.
Hello, Mr. President.
Well, Henry, how are you?
I just wanted to extend my really warmest congratulations.
Well, this is, we all knew it was going to happen, and we got our 60%.
Well, we didn't. One couldn't really be sure until one had seen her.
And every state except Massachusetts and maybe Minnesota, although I think we get that too.
It's an extraordinary tribute.
You know, this this fellow to the last was a prick. Did you see his concession statement?
Started out.
He was very gracious in the beginning.
And then he went right back to saying that...
And Ray Price just sent me in a wire saying that I look forward to working with you and your supporters for peace in the years ahead. And I just said, hell no, I'm not going to send him that sort of a wire.
Absolutely.
Don't you agree?
Absolutely.
And I just argued with Bobby here about it, but I said, Ray just doesn't have the right sense of this sort of thing.
No, that he was ungenerous.
Yeah.
He was petulant.
Yeah.
Unworthy.
Right.
Was he?
As you probably know, I responded in a very decent way to him.
I thought it was a great statement.
As far as I could go, though, but I'm not going to say much time. Anyway, it was a good day. We had a terrible time in the damn Senate. We're going to end up with probably 44, but it isn't worth a damn anyway. Frankly,
it was a pity because we lost some people.
We lost Margaret Smith, but she's 74 years old. We lost Jack Miller because he's a jackass.
That's right.
And we lost Caleb Bob because he's too old. He's 68.
Yeah.
See? Here's your problem.
With those three, we would have come much closer.
Yeah. Well, it's all right. It's all right.
But at any rate, it's a
tremendous
personal triumph, Mr. President.
Well, you know something? It's hard for even all these left-wing columnists can do now is to piss on the not winning the Senate and the House and building the party, but they couldn't care less about that. The main thing is they know that we came up to bat against their candidate and beat the hell out of them.
And came up against their issue and turned it into an asset.
Right. Don't you think so? Don't you feel that?
You made Vietnam your issue.
Thank God it does.
The philosophy of weakness, the whole approach. Year after year, the media were harassing you. All the intellectuals were against you, and you've come out and have the greatest victory, I'm sure, in terms of margin that anyone has had.
Right.
It's a tremendous triumph.
Well, anyway, Henry, have a good night's sleep.
Have my warm and good vision.
Give him hell tomorrow.
Right.
President, I have Senator Humphrey for you.
Hello.
Mr. President.
Hubert, how are you?
Well, fine, and I wanted to call up just to congratulate you on this historic victory.
Well, thank you very much. You
racked them up.
You've been a very statesmanlike man. Yes, I always, just speaking as friends, people ask me very privately to compare this with 68, and I said, well, the difference is that when Senator Humphrey and I were campaigning and we had this terrible issue of Vietnam, we both put the country first. And I said, this time, I said, we had a problem where one fellow said any goddamn thing that came in his head.
Yeah.
Your private information, and you should know, for 3 days, I had the whole thing in my pocket.
Yes.
And you probably guessed, as you probably guessed.
Yes. I had a talk with Henry a couple of days ago.
Right.
They asked me whether or not we could have got a settlement like this. I said no.
Yeah. Well, you made a great statement. I asked Henry to call you, but I think you should know that.
Thank you.
Within 10 days, you will see it's all fallen into place. And we knew it a week ago, but we couldn't say it.
Well, I understood that.
But I felt you had to fight for your man. I understood why, but I know that you didn't approve of some of the tactics.
Well, I'll have a talk with you sometime. I knew it, you know, I did what I had to do.
Of course you did.
If not, Mr. President, this whole defeat would have been blamed on me and some
associates. That's right. That's right.
I know that.
That's right.
Well,
we'll get together and we'll work for the good of the country. That's the important thing.
Surely will. And I didn't want to let this night go by without.
Well, it's so good of you to call. And how are you feeling?
I'm feeling fine. By the way, my son was elected to the state senate out here.
Isn't that great? Well, I hope we didn't run a man against him that gave him any trouble.
Well, as a matter of fact, the man that ran against him is a very fine man. I was afraid the boy wasn't going to win.
Right.
But
isn't that great?
It's a good campaign, and you can imagine I feel pretty good tonight.
We have some good things going on here, and are you in Minnesota now?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. How's that coming out? I don't know. I haven't seen that. I see it's very close.
Yes. Of course, what you've got here now, Mr. President, is the city votes are in.
Do you think, how do you project it?
I think you'd win out here, but not by as large as you would in other states.
Yeah. But we never did, and Minnesota's always closer.
We're fairly well organized out here, Mr.
I know. Yeah, that's right. thicker with you coming out, you see. You hurt us, you see.
Well, I did.
But we didn't need you this time like 60, so I won't hold it against you.
I did my duty.
Okay. But you think we'll win it? You think we'll win it at the moment, seriously?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I think that that you'll most likely come out of here with between 50 and 100.
Okay. I'll hold you to that. Anything less than 50, I'm going to make you pay.
Make me pay, are you? All right. Well, you and Pat both look good on that TV tonight.
Oh, well.
And
those things are so hard to handle with us in roaring crowds, but
I've never told you how much I appreciated that handwritten letter, but I just want you to know that my wife and I cherish it.
Listen,
it meant a great deal to me.
I've been through this, and I meant it from the heart.
I know that.
Anyway, we'll do some good things for this country in the next year.
Righto, and
4 years, Hubert.
Areas you, I told Henry, you can depend on us.
I know it.
We're going to be there.
And just remember, whenever you think you're going to, you're checking yourself out, read about Churchill. I was reading Peter de Messingle's new. Well, it isn't new. It's a great biographer, California, the other day. You know, Hubert, when he was 68, he became prime minister, and Israeli was 68, so what the hell? You're still in your 60s.
Yeah, I know, but we Minnesotans got a bad reputation for running too often.
Okay.
You know about it.
Well, good luck, and thank you for being such a statesman.
All right, friend. Goodbye.